Hopefully we can move a little faster.
Necessary point of clarification.
Mr. Chairman, before Mr. Badger starts, I'd like to say that I will abstain from comment and voting on this project.
As Mr. J.T. Holland, let the record so show. Thank you very much, Mr. Holland. And you have filed the paperwork with Mr. Joseph.
I have filed the paperwork.
Thank you.
Baymark Construction requests authorization to construct a 1,375-foot-long by 10-foot-wide open-pile concrete fishing pier with a 116-foot-long by 30-foot-wide modified T-head that will support a 30-foot-wide octagon-shaped covered shelter and two floating docks for water taxis and boat rentals at their property along Chesapeake Bay in the town of Cape Charles, Northampton County. The project is protested by nearby Pine Netter and the Arlington Plantation Homeowners Association. This was deferred from last month. Quad sheet showing the location of the project in red. Kings Creek, town of Cape Charles, Cape Charles Harbor, Plantation Creek. The water taxi, proposed water taxi, will be running from the proposed pier to the town of Cape Charles and then into the Kings Creek Marina. The marina itself is a 224-slip marina, and Bay Creek Development is approximately a 1,700-acre mixed-use residential development with two golf courses, community beach, and there's potential here for a hotel and conference center that will be just south of the proposed pier. The fishing pier itself will be approximately a quarter of a mile long into the Chesapeake Bay with a height of approximately 16 feet at mean low water, and the covered shelter will be over 30 feet in height above mean low water. Again, another quad section showing the location. These two lights were the range lights for Federal Navigational Channel going into the harbor. They have been relocated to offshore, and with this relocation, the Coast Guard has stated they don't have a problem with the project, but will require that the pier lights be shielded so that it will not shine into the pilot houses of the vessels in the Federal Navigational Channel. This is looking north, and what's in red, the red line, is the approximate location of the fishing pier. As you can see, I guess you can, yeah, Mr. Like, who is the pine netter and who has protested the project, there's two pine nets are here and here, and they have lines that go in the shore there. Mr. Like believes that the proposed fishing pier would interfere with his catch and may render these two traps worthless. He goes on to state that the traps were constructed to last more than 1 year and would be expensive to remove and rebuild. He also has concerns that they may not be able to find suitable alternative sites to relocate the traps. Now we're looking south. This is, in red, is again the location of the proposed fishing pier, two traps, Plantation Creek, and Arlington Plantation Homeowners Association. Their subdivision is just on the south side of Plantation Creek. They have concerns over the size of the fishing pier itself. They feel that the proposed pier will also interfere with navigation up and down the shoreline from Cape Charles into Old Plantation Creek. They also have some concerns about the public trust doctrine itself, where one entity would be taking up so much of public state Sebacuous Bottom. Plan view drawing showing the location of the pier, T-head coming on in the shore, and in this general area is where the proposed hotel, conference center, condo units, and beach club are proposed. This is the T-head portion of it, showing 116-foot by 30-foot in the octagon-shaped covered shelter, a handicap walkway access to the floating 50-foot by 8-foot wide taxi landing. And we're going in a little closer to shore, and this is where the boat rentals would be in this general area here. VIMS has indicated that the individual and cumulative adverse impacts from the proposed community pier warrant careful consideration. They believe the overall length and width of the structure is excessive, and the applicant can reduce the dimensions of the structure to minimize the impacts to the environment and for the shading of SAV. With this information, we went to the applicant and their agent, and they addressed it, and that's what we have in front of us today. The applicant has responded by reducing the overall length by a little less than 400 feet to 393 feet, so that we have 1,375 feet, and the width of the pier from 20 feet down to 10 feet. Baymark also withdrew their request to deploy the 300 feet of reef balls under the proposed pier, as suggested by them. The Cape Charles Wetlands Board also reviewed this project in January of this year. The board approved it, but they also wanted all the other agencies to understand that the board's approval was based only on the area that was within their jurisdiction, which had minimum impact. This is a cross-sectional drawing showing the sheltered structure here. Again, showing the cross-section. It's showing 14 foot above NGDV 88, so that should make it, and there's low water, so that should be about 16 feet plus 3 feet of railing. That's 19 feet above low water for a quarter of a mile offshore, plus the octagon-shaped structure, which would be another probably 15 to 20 feet above, so you're approaching 35 feet or better in height at the very end, above mean low. Oyster Ground map, Baymark Construction has the bathing lease in front of their property. Mr. Likes, two nets were in place prior to the issuance of the lease itself. And as you can see, the trap is 400 feet south, and the northern trap is 2,150 feet north of the proposed pier. And also, where they've dropped it back approximately 400 feet, it's no farther offshore than the southern trap itself. Grind shots. I'm at the end of the structure looking back to the landward end where the arrow is. And now I'm switching positions. I'm on shore looking out, and there's a trap to the south, and it would be out as far as that is. Again, one last aerial. Thanks. Thank you. Okay. The health department has stated that the applicant has submitted an approved plan, and they do not have an objection to the project. And as I stated, the U.S. Coast Guard will require that the pier lighting be shielded. The Army Corps of Engineers has issued their RP-19, and no other state agency has expressed opposition to the project. Summary and recommendation. Staff believes Mr. Like has a legitimate concern that his catch will decrease as a result of the pier. The southern pine net is only 400 feet south of the proposed pier. The pier structure itself and the activities surrounding the pier, the fishing pier, water taxis, boat rentals will most likely change how fish move up and down the shoreline. I've changed the section of the code from what you've got in there. I think this is a little bit more pertinent. 28.2-302, which is the commercial fishing pier section, net fishing shall not be permitted within 300 yards of the sides of any commercial fishing pier. However, the commission may decrease this distance if it is considered it to be an excessive distance because of the size of the water body. Right now we have a licensed net with the proposed pier within that distance. So if the commission approved any type of fishing pier here, there's a question whether or not Mr. Like would be able to keep his licensed net within that 300 yards. Also, our subaqueous guidelines, Section 1C2, states that in granting or denying any permit for use of state-owned submerged lands and the waters overlying those lands, that the commission will consider, among other things, the effect of the proposed project upon other reasonable and permissible uses of state waters and state-owned submerged lands, marine and fisheries resources, wetlands, adjacent and nearby properties, anticipated public and private benefits, SAV, and water quality. The commission will also consider the water dependency of the project, alternatives for reducing any anticipated adverse impacts. The construction of a fishing pier is normally considered water dependent. However, in this case, there are two public fishing piers nearby. The public fishing pier at the mouth of Cape Charles Harbor is only 1.3 miles north of the proposed pier, and the Chesapeake State Park has a fishing pier that's less than 6 miles south of the project. The need for a water taxi is also unclear. The applicant could easily run a trolley service along the 2 to 3 mile route to downtown Cape Charles and their marina on Kings Creek. This service would not be interrupted by high winds or bad weather as any water taxi would be. And furthermore, the sheer size of this concrete pier would be larger than any other structure along the Chesapeake Bay in both Northampton and Accomack County, except for the public fishing pier at Chesapeake State Park, which was originally built as a car ferry terminal, and the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel itself. Therefore, based on the effect of the proposed project upon Mr. Lyke's two licensed pound nets and the other alternatives available for reducing the anticipated adverse impacts, staff cannot support the project as proposed and recommends the project be denied. It's also my understanding that we do have a letter in your packet from Mr. Lyke that was dated May 22nd, which states that he is willing to withdraw his protest with guarantees from Baymark. I have not received anything from Mr. Lyke in writing or Baymark that said that they accepted that guarantee. Now, I do not believe Mr. Lyke. Oh, he is here. Mr. Lyke is here. That's all I have.
Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one question about the length of the pier. Do you have a single overhead that shows us how much depth is gained with the length of the pier?
How much depth?
What the MLW contour the line is under the pier. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this is off of NGVD 88. It's showing 8 feet there, so that would be 6 feet in depth.
And how far is it back in? If you cut the pier in half, what would the depth of the water be?
Yeah, whoops. All right, halfway back.
The floating dock at 6 feet.
Would be about 3 feet. I believe that's right. Okay, halfway would be there. Hang on.
Yeah, 3.5 feet.
Here's the break. Four and a half, so 2.5 to 3 feet. There's a lot of bars. If you look at this photo, you can see these sandbars that come offshore.
Thank you.
So depending on where you were.
All right, any other questions for Hank? Thank you, Hank. All right, is anyone here representing Baymark? Swear the testimony you give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. State your full name and position.
Tom Langley, Langley McDonald Engineers of Virginia Beach, representing the applicant. Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of Baymark. I think Mr. Badger did an excellent job in presenting the case. Let me hit right to one of the points, though. The letter that he mentioned is in your packet. I hope that you did see this letter from Mr. Lyke regarding the discussions that the applicant has had with Mr. Lyke, and it is a conditional withdrawal of his protest, and I trust he will confirm this. I'm here to represent the applicant to tell you that the applicant does accept those conditions in their entirety, and so hopefully Mr. And if I might read the letter.
Where is the letter in that pack?
Number six.
Number six.
Under tab, and behind tab five, of course. All right, go ahead now, Tom.
The second paragraph of that letter says, in the event of the Baymark Construction Fund fishing pier directly or indirectly causes the relocation of two of my pound net fishing traps in or near Plantation Creek, Baymark Construction will bear 100% of the cost of the relocations of the traps. In addition, Baymark Construction agrees that if I decide to move the trap to my point along their waterfront south of the pier, they will not protest the issuance of a permit to VMRC as long as it is at least 900 feet away from the pier in compliance with the VMRC guidelines. And again, I'm here to represent the applicant saying that we agree with those conditions. Okay. Mr. Like.
Thank you. Thank you.
And along those same lines, sort of in keeping with the last discussion here, the applicant has gone out of the way to modify this permit to try to comply with the issues that have been brought to our attention. The original application was longer than what you see before you now. It went out to minus 8 mean low water and would be much more safe for a water taxi. It was also 20 feet wide. We anticipated not only the fishing patrons but also golf cart access, and we wanted to have plenty of width for that. And we also had reef balls under the fishing pier in order to attract fish to the area for the fishermen. Upon discussions at the Cape Charles Wetlands and Dunes Board, upon receiving letters from Mr. Like and from Mr. Milton, we have modified the permit such that it is shorter. It is actually at the length of the pound nets or a little bit shorter than that. We removed the reef balls and we narrowed the pier to reduce and virtually eliminate impacts to SAV as it goes across the nearshore area. And so now it ends at minus 6 NAVD, which, as Hank says, minus 4 mean low water. Pier width is only 10 feet wide across that entire length. And we've done everything that we can in order to comply with the issues that were brought to our attention. The VIMS comments that Mr. Badger read into the record were comments prior to these revisions. And so we have responded to their comments and modified the permit accordingly. I also want to point out that the preliminary design of the pier calls for piles that are 50 feet apart, 10 feet wide, of course, for the bent, but 50 feet between bents, again, to minimize the impact by reducing the number of piles in the structure. We have met with the Corps of Engineers and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on site regarding the tiger beetles, and they've issued a letter and the Corps have issued a permit. As long as the construction is completed by June 1st, 2007, that U.S. Fish and Wildlife does not see an issue with the tiger beetles. We deferred it from last month's VMRC meeting specifically to try to address additional concerns that Mr. Milton has brought up. We are unable to resolve all of those issues, and I understand he is here today, and I trust that he will be speaking as well. And at that, I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions from the commission? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a couple of questions. The first one is about the use. As I understand it, this is a private community type pier. It's not. Is that correct? It's not going to be open to the public per se.
Will not be open to the general public, but open to anybody that gets into Bay Creek.
And how many home sites are in that development?
There are a total of about 5,000 planned.
Okay, and let's see. Do you have any additional justification for the structure on the end? You proposed a gazebo type structure.
That is in anticipation of the water taxi patrons, since there will be lag time for them to wait for the water taxi, and there could be some inclement weather issues. That's for their convenience and also for the vendors who will be selling bait and tackle for the fishermen.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Garrison?
Tom, could you address staff's concern about the water taxi rather than a trolley?
Well, the water taxi is, Cape Charles is a maritime harbor, and the idea of a water taxi to gain access to various points along the waterfront is a natural. Water taxi is in other locales of that nature, and this is just it's an asset.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Do you have others speak in favor?
Yes, sir. Mr. Jack White is here to speak in favor as well.
How many others?
that'll be it, I think.
All right, Mr. White, glad to have you with us today. Mr. White's the former member of this commission and present member of the Board of Supervisors of Hampton County. You swear the testimony shall give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth will help you, God.
I do. Thank you. First, thank you for allowing me to speak today. Good to see you, Commissioner. Mr. Joseph, ladies and gentlemen. As Ms. Pruitt said, I'm Jack White from Cape Charles. I still serve on the Board of Supervisors. I've been there for many years. Today I'm speaking in behalf of Jack White, private citizen. I've taken a great deal of interest in this project. As you can see, I've been retired for years. I have plenty of time. And I've watched Mr. Foster's projects to be a great deal of interest. I've been down and looked at this project on several occasions. It's about as far south on this piece of property as you can drive or go by automobile. It's directly across from Custer's tomb. Many of you would recognize the piece of land that he's alluding to as Custer's tomb. I've watched Mr. Foster's progress, and if his future is any indication of what's to come, it's going to be more than satisfactory. Mr. Foster is a great visionary. He came down here from Cape Charles and has bought pieces of property. The entire Hollywood Estate, or the Scott Estate, as I refer to it, is 1,800 and some acres. And he also has the other end of Cape Charles, which is about 900 acres, which is where the marina is. For those that are vaguely familiar with Cape Charles, I live on the beachfront right across from a pavilion. Some people call it a gazebo. I've lived there with my wife 22-plus years. I think I used the word just previously about Mr. Foster being a visionary. He's not only a home builder or a builder of a marine. He builds entertainment that goes with it. He's taken option on the little Eastern Shore Railroad. He's done a tremendous job of cleaning it up, buying other equipment to make it a functional railroad to tie in with tourism. Cape Charles has become a destination. I live right on the beach, and Sundays, my wife died about 6 months ago, and Sundays we usually reserve the front porch to sit there. People are parking on the streets, parking, believe it or not. A little village like Cape Charles is getting me a project on weekends. Mr. Foster has allocated land, parking, things like that, and he seems to be one step ahead of the county government at all for his views on anticipation. I've been down there, and I know many of the people that live down there. I have not had the first one to call me in opposition to it. And I understood the waterman's opposition to it. But I would wholeheartedly endorse Mr. Foster's product. Anything he does a tad better than he promises to do. And again, I thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. White. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to speak in favor of this project? Mr. Light? You swear the testimony shall give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth will help you, God.
Yes, sir, I do. My name's Keith Light. I'm a fish trapper. I've been over here a lot of times, and I've had several problems with this trap in the past anyway. I'm more than satisfied. Any problems that I would have had or foresaw, they've dealt with it remarkably. And it will bring good things to our community. I've seen a lot that they've done, and it's been some tasteful preserving the heritage. It's been some remarkable things they've done in the area.
Thank you, Keith. Appreciate it. All right. Is anyone here in opposition to this application? No one in opposition? Opposition? Come right on out. One gentleman. Anyone else in opposition? I can swear you in at one time. Okay. Where the testimony shall give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth shall help you, God.
Yes, I do.
Thank you. State your full name.
My name is Marvin Milton, and I'm representing the Plantation Homeowners Association. And I heard Custer's tomb mentioned, so we're right in that area if some of you aren't familiar with where we're located.
All right.
our opposition to this proposal is merely the colossal size of it. And also the space it would occupy on property that's owned by the citizens of the state of Virginia. Now, this property would be privatized for a private corporation for the gain of profit. This would be an asset for those 5,000 potential people that are going to live in Bay Creek. Adding water shuttle service between two other locations to bring people back and forth would be an amenity for Bay Creek, not Cape Charles. The adding of boat rental, tackle shops and things out there, operating at different hours of the day and perhaps into the evening. There's a number of things that perhaps this would be used for in the future that no one knows what that is today. So by approving something like this, we're giving someone a carte blanche to use this as they see fit in the future, with it perhaps not even having to get approval to do so. So I believe that privatizing this large area that this huge structure would occupy would be wrong to approve. The size certainly has been reduced. The structure itself is a marvel of engineering, I'm sure. But having a structure in the bay, something that's unlike it today, you're also opening up a precedent for other requests in the future by other developers that could add other obstructions in the bay you just don't know what's going to be before you in the future, and this would set a precedent for that. So we are opposed to it. You know, it is in view of our community, and we don't know what's going to be going on out there, what kind of noise would be generated by activities. Also, there's, with the water depth that's there, small boat traffic during storms and rough water, people use that. I've used it personally. So
where is your community in relation to that? And can you show us on next slide, or you need another one?
Hank had one here that did show it.
There, in the distance, that's Plantation Creek, and our community is right there where the arrow is pointing. So we are in view of this structure.
All right. Thank you.
So by privatizing this, we think that's the wrong use of this area that belongs to all of us as citizens of the state of Virginia, and we encourage you to deny this permit.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any questions from the commission? Thank you. I forgot to ask if any questions for Mr. White.
I did have one for Mr. Light.
Mr. Light?
Mr. Light.
Okay. I may see if there's any more in opposition. Anyone else in opposition? Okay. Mr. Light, could you come up? Mr. Fox has a question for you.
This trap that you're proposing to move, is that a good trap? You catch a lot of fish there?
Yes, I have four traps in there. I have two on the south side of the plantation and two on the north side of the plantation. And I've chosen to drive the two traps on the north side of the plantation that are treated holes because there's such high fish from the first dry fish. And I have moved them. There are good fish in this trap. I'd like to not have to move my fish trap. And I've spoken with the landlord. I know the law says a 900 foot, but I'm not sure if it has to be or nothing can be done. But they're both good producing traps.
But with the pier in place, the one that's closest is probably
I'm afraid the sand in that area moves a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly. We can have a couple storms and it can change the whole bottom. And I was concerned about it. The sand building up and actually bringing the bars further out, and the beach going out to the trap. But it's going to be open underneath the pier. So anyway, I investigated a little bit. I believe that the sand will just move underneath of it as it goes and won't build up again.
So
I'm concerned about having to move the trap. But I'm not as concerned now about it ruining the fish trap.
All right. So, but they've agreed to remove the trap for you and place it wherever you want to go at their cost.
If I have to move it, yes. They have agreed.
Okay. And do you have an idea where you might want to move it if you...
No. No, I haven't. I haven't looked around and thought about it, but I have other sites as well.
Mm-hmm.
As a fish trapper, I have 9 licenses, but I fish 6 locations, so I have 3 locations that are turned in for trout. So I have locations in other areas that if I have to move it, I can just kind of turn a different one in for trout and put it in that location. I hold other locations.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lang. All right, Mr. Langley.
Just a couple comments, if I might, please, with regard to Mr. Milton's comments. He mentioned the colossal size. Again, I want to emphasize that we have minimized the size. It's only 10 feet wide. That's 6 feet, so another 4 feet beyond that. It's only 10 feet wide instead of the 20 feet wide that we originally wanted. He mentioned the change of use in the future. We all know quite well that the permit is for one use only, and if you try to change the use, you got to come back before the commission. Mr. Grab has made me fully aware of that on the projects. And with regard to navigation, small boat traffic during storms, again, the pier is high. The pier is wide between piles. Small boat traffic can go underneath this pier, but then they'll get trapped in the pound net. And so one of the main reasons we reduced the length of the pier to the length of the pound net is for navigation reasons. Any small boat traffic along that shoreline has to go outside the pound net and therefore outside the pier as well.
Any questions for Mr. Schick and Mr. Fox?
What would be the disadvantage to the project to shorten the pier further?
The water taxi would be out of the project altogether if it was any shorter.
How much is the water taxi going to draft?
3 feet.
3 feet. Mr. Fox?
Would Baymark, that is the name, right? Would Baymark be willing to make this pier a public pier at some reasonable fee?
I cannot agree to that, no, sir. By virtue of the Bay Creek community by itself.
Mr. Robbins?
I think my question's been answered. It was related to the draft of the water taxis and what size and draft vessels you plan to use for that service. Are these going to be 3-foot draft vessels, and how big are they? 35 feet. Thank you.
All right. Matters before the commission. Got Mr. Garrison and then Mr. Fox. Okay.
I'd like to move for approval of Baymark Construction Corporation 05-2610.
Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second the motion.
Seconded by Mr. Schick. Further discussion to the motion, Mr. Fox.
I'm wondering, we have a document in here from VIMS recommending that the pier be shortened and made less wide, and that, in fact, has happened, but we do not have another document in here from VIMS saying now everything is okay or now everything is built.
All right, Lyle, you've heard the compromise. What's your position?
That's correct. Unfortunately, there is no magic line that you can draw that would make it to would meet the environmental conditions. What we can say is the area, like Mr. Lackes says, a very dynamic area with sand and SAV. The higher the structure, the narrower the structure, the less probability that you're going to shade or impact SAV. And as Mr. Langley had stated, the distance between the pilings is also going to help the situation. That's all I can actually address.
Thank you, Bob.
I cannot say specifically what the impacts would be now at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But this new plan greatly minimizes
from the original one, yes, sir.
All right. Any discussion to the motion?
I got a question for staff.
Mr. Badden, question for
I don't know what particular part of staff.
Hank?
I guess Hank may be able to address it, but I'd seriously doubt it.
I was going to stay seated.
We're talking about a 900-foot exclusion for fishing around the pier. That's basically for peers, private peers for hire. This is not a pier for hire, so why does it apply to this? This is just a private pier with the same intent to be used for fishing, but it's not.
It's a commercial fishing pier, and 282302 addresses that. Is that what you're asking? Did I miss it?
I mean, I consider it a private. It's commercial, but it's private.
Yeah.
And there's no stipulation, a difference between the two of them, evidently.
No. It's a commercial fishing pier as far as we're concerned.
All right. Anyone else to the motion? Mr. Garrison.
My motion was based on the height of the pier and the width of the pier and the pilings we all talked about. And even the man, Mr. Likett, lives over there, said he couldn't see the possibility of sand building on there. So I think Mr. Langley's design is apropos for the location, and we certainly proved that the water taxi service needed that length of pier. This development's going to be big, and I just really appreciate being a city planner for a long time. I really appreciate what appears to be the planning of this project is beyond reproach. Thank you.
Mr. Josephson.
As Hank mentioned, in order to allow Mr. Light to preclude any questions in the future as to whether Mr. Light can keep his pound nets within the same distance of the pier as they are now, probably behoove the commission to make a finding that he can retain them consistent with 28.2-302 as part of the motion to approve the project.
All right. Could we have a friendly motion to that, amendment to that, Mr. Garrison?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Schick?
Mm-hmm.
Include that section to go. Thank you, Carl. That's very good. Dr. Jones.
I have a question for Hank, too.
Question for Hank.
I have a concern over the tackle shop at the end of the pier. That's an upland function. No reason that that's water dependent.
No, that's the first I've heard of a tackle shop.
Yeah. And a structure for the water taxi could be upland, too, so you don't have a structure at the end of the pier.
Is that proposed now? I missed that, too.
We had, I thought, indicated that structure at the end of the pier would include for the fishing patrons and the water taxi patrons. On our permit application, we call that structure a covered shelter for pier and water taxi patrons, pier patrons being fishermen, is the way that I had looked at it. That was my intent.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anyone else to the motion? Mr. Fox.
I'm just going to comment here. There's no question it's well designed, and even though this is not an architectural review board, it appears to be a very attractive facility, but I'm troubled by the fact that it is for the private use of certain groups, and it's not for the public use, and we are taking the public bottom and converting that to private use. I'm also concerned with the SAV beds that are there, and so, and I heard the comments from the neighboring community, and I guess I'm swayed that this is probably something that's little more than we need to have.
Tom, could I ask you a question? How many lots do you have that on that piece of property? I mean, how many piers could you build if you weren't going this route? Swear the testimony shall give me the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth will help you guys.
I do.
As a follow-up to Mr. Fox's question, if you want.
Who is he?
Oh, I'm sorry. State your full name and who you're with.
My name is Steve Bennett. I'm the construction manager at Bay Creek. I work for Baymark Construction.
Okay. If you were not going to have this community pier, which is closest I can come to whatever it is, how many piers could you put there?
Well, I'm not aware.
How much waterfront do you have?
Miles.
Yeah.
A mile?
More than a mile.
So if you subdivided them at a given normal 100-foot lot, there could be a lot of personal piers that would be granted by the general permit. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have on the northern side of Cape Charles, there's probably 50 lots that run along the bay there as well.
Are you building piers on those?
We're not at this point. We're intending for this to be the only one for the property.
Would you put that in writing?
Perhaps.
Okay. Maybe. And perhaps we'll consider it.
I don't believe there's any riparian property owners that butt up against the water. There's community beaches in front of the ones in the northern.
Owned by whom?
By the developer itself or the corporation. But they're not riparian owners individually. And I think that's the same case on this section down here, too.
But the developer is the owner. I'm trying to say that there's two issues here.
Well, I think you were looking at individual riparian.
No, I wasn't. We're talking what if.
Okay.
His question was what if. What if they build this? What if this happened? I'm saying what if the developer said, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to give these lot owners riparian rights to the whole area. And we're looking at how many piers. The potential of how many piers? More than one?
Absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My point goes just as a follow-up to Dr. Jones's question of staff with respect to the structures at the end of the pier. It seems to me that as a matter of policy, when we're debating whether or not to allow a structure that may not be water-dependent on a pier, if there's public benefit involved, then we may allow it. And in cases where we've had community piers, though, where they're not open to the general public, but for the benefit of private property owners in that community, then we typically require that a gazebo or shelter-type structure be located landward of mean low water. We have another case before us today, similar situation, 30-foot by 30-foot gazebo that was supposed to be located landward of mean low water. So it seems to me that if we're going to be consistent from a policy standpoint, the benefits of this are essentially private. While it is a large community, the benefits are still private. It's quasi-commercial but private. So it seems to me that we ought to require a location of that structure landward of the pier.
You have a right to do that.
Okay. And I think that the length of the pier, I mean, the length of the pier is very long, but having said that, it appears that it is necessary to accommodate the water taxi. So I would offer an amendment to require that the structures that are proposed for the end of the pier be located on the upland.
Is there a second to that? Seconded by Dr. Jones. All right. Further discussion to the substitute. Mr. Fox and then Mr. Garrison.
I have further discussion on the previous point of whether there could be any other piers.
Okay. Go ahead.
I think I would feel differently if the owner would stipulate that he is willing to forego all rights for future piers in Chesapeake Bay from his property.
Okay.
He would have this one pier and this pier alone.
All right. Mr. Langley, could you get with your folks and while I'm proceeding here? Ms. Garrison, you have a comment while we're waiting?
Mr. Langley is tied up, but I mean, how is this going to affect the water taxi by not having that end of the pier in uplands? Can it still function at the end of the pier or some steps or platform or something there to run the water taxi back over?
Well, they just have to walk around the docks.
Yeah, all that would stay, just the gazebo would go landward, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Is that what I could understand, Mr. Schick's amendment? I mean, excuse me, Mr. Robbins' amendment, is it just for shelter?
Right. The gazebo, Mr. Chairman, the gazebo structure on the end of the dock would be required to be located landward. The water taxi could still operate with the floating docks, et cetera.
With a T structure at the end of the pier.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Right. The T head is still allowed. What I'm proposing is that the length of the pier be allowed as proposed, the width, everything else, and the floating docks, but that the gazebo be located landward because, in my opinion, from a public policy standpoint, there's no public benefit to it.
So if you get wet, you just got to run like a Dickinson.
All right, Mr. Langer, you would address Mr. Fox's concern.
Mr. Fox, the Bay Creek development is separated into two sections. There's a southern section, which is the largest section, and the northern section, which is 300 and some odd acres. The northern section has individual lots along the bayfront, and
with riparian right.
Well, I'm not I'm not prepared to say whether or not it's got, they have riparian rights. What I am prepared to say is that those individual lots have been sold to individual property owners, and they have whatever rights they have. It is outside of the purview of the developer at this point to preclude them from building.
Show piers. Us where they are on the chart. On the
good question.
Yep.
Okay. There we go. The north end of the Bay Creek development includes this Chesapeake Bay shoreline here. The south end starts around here and comes all the way down to Plantation Creek. So you can see this, the developer does have control of here. The developer no longer has control of this individual lot shoreline here. So the developer has told me that they will agree that they will not propose to build and will restrict the development of any additional piers along this shoreline here.
Okay.
But they don't have any control over this anymore.
Well, they can't grant something they don't have control of.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
But I guess we should put this in the motion.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we restate the motion at this point?
All right. Mr. Robbins, would you restate it with that?
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think I'll try to clean this up. We move for approval of the project as amended to include a prohibition on the construction of any other piers along the southern shoreline or the southern portion of the Bay Creek development. Furthermore, that the gazebo structure proposed at the end of the pier be located and moved to the upland. And finally, that Mr. Like that Mr. Like's existing pound nets not be prohibited, or that Mr. Like be allowed to retain his existing pound nets.
And with the new dimensions.
And with the reduced dimensions as per the presentation today in length and width.
Dr. Jones, you accept that?
Yes.
The seconder of the mic. Okay. You have heard now the substitute motion restated. Any comments to the motion? Do you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Robbins. I want to make sure that the motion is specific to this, wherever my cursor is, there it is, this Chesapeake Bay shoreline here, the Chesapeake Bay shoreline, because there are other individual lots inside Plantation Creek, and there are properties inside Kings Creek. So
That's fine. Can you give us a southern boundary? Is there a landmark for the record?
Just say the western shoreline along the Chesapeake Bay, along the southern Bay Creek development.
That's fine.
Well, when you get off the bay.
All right. All in favor of the substitute motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Let the record show abstain.
And let the record show that Mr. Holland abstains and file proper paperwork. The motion carries. Substitute motion carries. Thank you very much. All right. What we're going to try to do, we wanted to break for lunch at noon and then come back as soon as possible. We're going to go until about 12:15, and then we'll continue the agenda the rest of the day. The next item on the agenda is the City of Virginia Beach. That's item 7. If you recall, item 6 was deferred to July.
I'm going to miss you.
This is a formal restoration hearing for the City of Virginia Beach regarding the overdredging of the Lynn Haven boat ramp and beach facility, municipal channel situated along Crab Creek near the Lynn Haven Inlet in Virginia Beach. Can I have the lights, Kathy? That's a quick look at a vicinity map. The star denotes the general area of Crab Creek and the city's Lynn Haven disposal site. One of our state images showing the location of Crab Creek in relation to the nearby waterways. You see the Chesapeake Bay, the Lynn Haven River, Pleasure House Creek. Here's the Lesnar Bridge. Crab Creek does provide immediate access into the Chesapeake Bay and both branches of the Lynn Haven River. A little closer look, we'll see the boat ramp and beach facility here in the Crab Creek Channel. This is one of the earlier permitted drawings showing the location of the channel as permitted. The channel is approximately 2,600 feet long, 50 foot wide, with maximum depths of 6 feet. Although this permit has been modified several times, the permit is typically allowed dredging through October through February with time of year restrictions to protect shellfish and juvenile flounder. This is a staff aerial from early in March 2006. This is just a couple of weeks after the dredging was completed. We're looking at the northwest. You clearly see the area that was dredged and is maintained. And this apparently is the dredge barge that's still present. Another aerial, we're looking to the south. This is the permitted channel again, overlaying a state aerial. Late February, the city advised that the contractor accidentally overdredged this area of the channel between the two black bars. During the dredging, the city became concerned after noticing large amounts of sand offloaded. They had an intermediate survey completed, and based on those results, advised the contractor to correct his controls before continuing. It's another aerial, and to point out, we're talking about this area here, coming around the corner and heading back north. These are some ground shots showing the approximate area of the overdredging. We're looking southeast towards the turning basin. This is actually on the western side of the disposal area in the restricted area. We're looking directly at the turning basin in this area. Again, this is the turning basin looking from the eastern shore of the disposal site. And one last shot showing a boat traveling northward up the up the channel towards the bridge. One last shot of the permitted channel versus the aerial. Excuse me. Salmons, Inc., the contractor, says that this was simply an operator error due to improper calibration of a tidal gauge. With that in mind, per the city bathymetric surveys provided, staff would like to show what was dredged. And this is the pre-dredge survey performed on January 19, 2006. In blue, this is the boundaries of the existing channel, permitted channel. And we remember that the permit was authorized to a maximum depth of 6 feet mean low water. During the pre-dredge survey, the results show that a good portion of this section of the channel is already at 6 feet or deeper. As we compare this to the post-dredge survey, performed February 23, 2006, after dredging of this area had been completed, we see that almost the entire area has been dredged deeper than 7 feet. Furthermore, a good portion has been dredged to 8 feet or deeper, as denoted by the orange color. That shows up as a bit of a pink, but the orange color. And then we have a few pockets of 9 feet mean low water. The city has confirmed that they will not pay the contractor for anything dredged deeper than 6 feet. This was not a part of their originally agreed contract. And of the total 6,500 cubic yards estimated to have been dredged, approximately 2,000 cubic yards was taken below 6 feet mean low water. Per Salmons, Inc., this additional work cost him by exceeding the city contract cost. And this is the last aerial. Again, this is the area that's overdredged, starting here, coming in the turning basin, and going about halfway up the eastern side of the channel. It's worth noting that DEQ has issued a notice of violation and is currently proceeding with their enforcement procedures. Can I have the lights, Kathy? In reviewing past requests to maintenance dredge this channel, VIMS has stated that Crab Creek is an integral part of the Lynn Haven River ecosystem, which supports numerous commercially important finfish species, including and in particular summer flounder. Therefore, dredging much deeper than the permit allows or the necessary to accommodate boat traffic should not be taken lightly. Although the city and contractor claim there was no intention to overdredge the permitted channel, staff is concerned why areas of the channel and turning basin were dredged so deep, in some places up to 3 feet deeper than the maximum allowed depth. Furthermore, according to the pre-dredge survey, several areas of the channel and turning basin were already at depths of 6 feet or greater. These areas should not even have been considered for maintenance dredging in the first place. Unfortunately, Salmons, Inc. has a recent history of dredging discrepancies and disregarding the authority of this commission to permit the appropriate use of state-owned bottoms. As recently as last month, the commission considered numerous problems associated with the Tanner's Landing project in Norfolk. Given that this appears to be solely an error by the contractor, not the applicant, staff recommends that significant civil charges be considered for the contractor of up to $10,000 for each violation in lieu of further enforcement as permitted by Section 28.2.12.13 of the Code. While staff does consider this violation to have resulted in a significant degree of environmental impact, it is definitely a major degree of deviation and noncompliance. Clearly, Salmons, Inc. has violated the conditions of a commission permit and could be subject to the assessment of civil penalties by the appropriate circuit court and amounts not to exceed $25,000 per day per violation. By code, the city is exempt from royalties for the permitted dredging, but the contractor is not exempt for dredging deeper than the permitted depth. As such, staff also recommends the assessment of triple royalties to Salmons, Inc. in the amount of $3,564 for the unauthorized dredging of 1,980 cubic yards of material at the maximum allowable rate of 60 cents per cubic yard. That concludes the presentation. I'm available for any questions.
Any questions from the commission?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Robbins?
Did the contractor participate in a pre-dredge conference, and if so, was there any tolerance established for overdredging?
The original permit had no overdredge tolerance. It was a maximum of 6 feet mean low water. It's my understanding that the city did meet with the contractor before beginning, and we received a notice that the work would begin in January.
Do we normally meet with those?
In some cases, we do when we're notified. This particular case, some of the larger dredging operations, as long as we get a notice from the city or from the applicant, in some cases we will not.
Can you explain what this, what is the significant, you say it's a significant degree of environmental impact?
Well, I think staff's opinion is that any time that large quantity of sand is removed beyond the permitted depth, there's a significant environmental impact.
But what is it? What is it?
It's the removal of the sand itself and the habitat that it supports. And that's my opinion, or staff's opinion. We could certainly consult with VIMS for that.
I mean, what are you saying? It takes out animals?
My opinion, yes, sir. It disturbs the habitat, the natural habitat.
I thought that was the purpose of the time of the year. Did they violate that, too?
No, they did not violate the time of year restriction. You may want to consult with VIMS about the additional dredging disturbance as it relates to environmental impact.
Could you explain that to us, please?
That wasn't the actually wording in our specific report, but Justin is correct. The generally dredging impacts we look at as temporary because they will go away over time. You do remove the benthic infauna that is a source of food for that area, and that is a very important area, the very mouth of the Lynn Haven. We have surveys showing juvenile summer flounder. Excuse me. That is a nursery area. So it's a question of scale, actually. Very locally, it would take longer for the benthic infauna to restore itself to where it can support the juvenile flounder there the deeper you go. So it is a question of scale and space and time for the entire Lynn Haven system. But we do agree that in the area of the dredge, there was
What's the significance of the time of the year again?
That generally is when the juveniles are actually present, and I do not think that occurred.
No, it appears that they dredged within the permitted time frame. The time of year restriction is from March to October.
But then again, we aren't just focusing on juveniles. That is our primary concern in that area, but they're also adults.
So the depth, the extra inch or foot, didn't make any difference as far as the animals that were, as far as the flounder directly, but indirectly with whatever was on the bottom. That is correct.
You've removed that habitat that supported the food source in that area for some amount of time before it is restored naturally.
No, right,
I like this.
All right, you got Mr. Garrison and Mr. McCleskey.
Lyle, when you overdredge,
said average are 8 feet, 2 feet, 3 feet, whatever, that's going to mean longer for that longer year for the inlet washes back in, correct? So you got longer recuperation period. And I guess the pointed question is, it's kind of like the end, where you, if you, we have, in cases, we have deliberately overdredged to get overkill and been allowed to do that in small areas where we could actually dig the hole deeper. We keep digging that every year, so we dig it deeper. And with, that way, it's longer time to recuperate, but we have to go back and redredge. Is some merit there?
I'm not real clear on the exact question.
All right, suppose you had 6 foot, he did stay at a 6 foot level, okay. He went, let's say he went there average of 7, 1 foot too deep. So he's been, this is what all this proposed penalty is about, over dredging deeper. I'm saying that to arrive back at 6 foot or keep that, it's going to take longer in time to fill that over dredging back in. You follow me?
Yes, sir.
You want to come back as often. You're not allowed in the flounder spawning season, whatever. You're allowed on a certain times of year. But to me, with the environment, it'd clean it up a longer period of time with overdredging. There's some factors there that we have to weigh against each other.
Well, you are correct, and we look at that when we assess a project. We are very concerned about continuous impacts to that area, dredging too often. So an overdredge is we do not recommend against overdredging in certain cases. In this particular case, what you're talking about, we look at on a location-by-location basis, depending upon the material. Here, it's primarily sand. In many places, you have changes in material, such as going to silt mud or sometimes even hitting clay, which is not very good. So in this case, we view the restoration of the benthic infauna due to it being primarily